older staff, and we've also lost significant capacity with the NHS through privatisation. So we don't have enough beds, we don't have enough staff, and the staff we do have are being treated appallingly.
The health service is also coping with an ageing population. A large number of people now live with chronic conditions like heart disease and diabetes.
The COVID-19 pandemic severely tested the NHS, with its aftermath still posing serious challenges. Health officials and experts warn for the UK's National Health Service to survive, the next government should declare it a national emergency. Saipur is at London.
India says it will enact the Citizenship Amendment Act that provides fast-track naturalization for multiple religious groups who fled to India from Afghanistan, Bangladesh and Pakistan before 2014. The law, however, excludes Muslims from those countries. Back in 2019, law's approval sparked deadly protests across the country and was halted since. The Muslim minority in India fears the government is using this law and other similar laws to widen crackdown on them.
India introduced this bill in 2016 with the aim of granting citizenship to what it calls a persecuted section of refugees. However, the bill has become one of the most controversial issues across the country since it excludes Muslims from availing citizenship. Critics accuse the ruling BJP of targeting a particular community on the basis of faith, which experts call unconstitutional.
Commentators also question the exclusion of persecuted religious minorities from other regions such as Tibet, Sri Lanka and Myanmar. India's Interior Ministry has said in a statement, those eligible can now apply online for Indian citizenship. The issue has been one of the key pledges of Indian Prime Minister since assuming office in 2014. The new legislation makes changes to more than six decades old Indian citizenship law.
It's unfortunate for us that we are not part of this new law, despite the fact we have faced worse persecution any community has faced so far. We have still hope one day India will accept us on the ground of humanity.
Opposition political parties have accused the ruling party of influencing the elections, saying the move is to polarize the voters, considering its timing. More than 200 petitions challenging the law are still pending before the court of law.
We thank India they provide us shelter. It's an act of kindness, but we urge this country not to abandon us, knowing the fact we have seen deadly violence and persecution.
India, home to roughly 200 million Muslims, have recently seen targeted attacks and vicious hate campaigns. Critics accuse the ruling party of mixing religion with politics, resonating with India's majority. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Russia Navy warship, and China Navy warship. This is Iranian Navy warship 235, Italian Channel 16. Do you read me? Over.
The Maritime Security Belt 2024 has officially kicked off with Russian and Chinese vessels entering Iran's territorial waters south of the country on Tuesday. The naval and airborne units of Iran's army and the IRGC, along with their Chinese and Russian counterparts, will participate in various operations during this exercise. Naval delegations from Azerbaijan, Pakistan, Kazakhstan, Oman and South Africa have also taken part as observer states. At the first stage of the drill, the naval officers of the three countries as well as the observer states reviewed different phases of the exercise on maps and held tactical briefings. Later, the naval commanders of Iran, Russia and China held a joint presser. The Iranian Navy's deputy commander said the main aim of the joint exercise is to help safeguard security in the northern part of the Indian Ocean.
Upholding peace and security in the north of Indian Ocean and having a specialized cooperation in combating piracy and terrorism in our region are among the main goals of this exercise. We are constantly working to improve this cooperation.
Meanwhile, Chinese and Russian Navy commanders said the joint exercise further demonstrates the preparedness of the participating countries to maintain security while also deepening their practical cooperation. 2024 is the fifth consecutive year that the Islamic Republic of Iran's Navy is hosting countries participating in the Maritime Security Belt drills in the northern Indian Ocean region.
This year's naval drills have kicked off under the motto "Together for Peace and Security," with participating countries highlighting the importance of jointly safeguarding regional security. Mahdiyab Bosyan, Konarak.
This is not the first time Palestinian people are spending Ramadan under Israeli aggression. In 2014, the Israeli regime also waged a destructive war on Gaza during the holy month. However, the current genocidal war is unprecedented in terms of its colossal casualties. Many Palestinians have become orphans and widows and lost their children. The memory of their loved ones will stay with them in Ramadan.
The life here is so difficult. The holy month of Ramadan is around the corner and we are still displaced from our homes and our families are torn apart. We have nothing to eat for iftar. I'm originally from Gaza. I've lost 37 members of my family. They were so close to my heart. Every time I remember them, my gut is wrenched and I become so sad and furious.
With markets destroyed and goods scarce, Gazans don't know where their iftar meals will come from, which means more suffering and agony. The vast majority of the people live in small tents amid the starvation that has already claimed the lives of several Palestinian children.
The situation in Gaza is very difficult. There is no food. The people are struggling to find anything to eat with flour scarce. Here in the south, they queue in long lines for food. Even those who attempt to get anything from the aid trucks are putting their lives at risk as Israeli soldiers open fire on them. I don't know what we're going to do in Ramadan.
Palestinians' catastrophe doesn't stop with the loss of their relatives. It is deepened by the full-scale destruction that has become palpable in every corner of Gaza, including mosques, which means they won't be able to say their prayers and worships as usual. Even if their mosques hadn't been destroyed, it would still be impossible for them to perform their prayers under the incessant Israeli bombardments.
The humanitarian conditions are completely disastrous. The people were displaced from several parts of Gaza, including the northern and central areas of the Strip. It is literally catastrophic. There is no source of income or food, and the people are completely relying on the small amounts of donation provided by a limited numbers of charity institutions. In addition to that, mosques have been completely destroyed by Israeli warplanes and we will never be able to pray in them.
While some aid has been trickling into Gaza, it's minuscule compared to the needs of the Palestinians. With Ramadan arriving, more assistance cannot come soon enough for them.
As the whole Muslim nation welcomes Ramadan, Palestinians are wondering why they have been abandoned by many Muslim leaders to face the Israeli campaign of death and starvation. To Abu Musabbih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
The Iranian National Oil and Gas Company says that this is the most strategic project in the history of Iran's oil and gas industry and its long-sought empowerment of domestic entities. Under this project, 90 trillion cubic feet of gas and 2 billion barrels of gas condensates will be available for use. Top Iranian companies Petropars, Oil Industries Engineering and Construction, Khatam al-Anbiya Construction Headquarters, Mapna Group, and a consulting company are the contractors of the mega project.
In the subject matter of the development and increase of capacities of the gas and oil refineries, we witnessed the second phase of Abadan refinery with the capacity of 210,000 barrels, which helped the production and supply of gas in the country. In the 14th phase of the South Pars refineries, 50 million cubic feet of gas is produced per day, which again adds to the capacity of gas production in the country.
The massive project has created an opportunity to kickstart economic prosperity and employment in the face of unilateral Western sanctions. This has also allowed Iranian producers and companies to engage greatly in the economic growth and industrial development of the country and neutralize the sanctions.
Today, all Iranian people should witness the fact that the surrounding nations trust the Iranian National Oil Company and the relative competent companies and contractors and do rely on them, because they know well that the South Pass was built by Iranian companies, and the day that they thought that it was impossible to do so without the help and presence of foreigners, that exact day was the day that South Pass became what it is today.
While sanctions have forced the governing bodies to change their attitude towards domestic companies and entrust them with tasks, it should be noted that Iranian producers are not perennial supporters of sanctions. Rather, they would like to interact and acquire world-class technologies from foreign companies to empower themselves.
With contracts for developing oil and gas fields signed and projects for boosting pressure in South Pars gas field being started, Iran is experiencing yet another success in the mega gas project to exploit the immense gas field. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger, to let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the most merciful.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the Holocaust on Palestinians in Gaza continues by the Zionist regime. There will be no ceasefire for the beginning of the month of Ramadan, and there seems to be no pressure on the Zionist regime. The United States and its cohorts have not only given the Zionist entity the green light to continue its genocide, but these countries are complicit. Inflicting as much pain and suffering as possible seems to be the goal of the Zionists and their Western backers. We're going to take a look at what happened today and what has happened for the last 5.5 months on this program. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Harley Schlanger, spokesman, International Schiller Institute out of Germany. And John Phoenix, journalist and international relations expert out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Well, Harley, let me start off with you. Did you expect this genocide to still be going on 5.5 months later?
Well, I think anyone who's listened to Joe Biden can realize that whatever he says about being more humane and stopping the killing of civilians, it means nothing. Because if the United States wanted to stop the killing, they could very quickly by cutting off the money and cutting off the weapons and cutting off the diplomatic cover. So regardless of the fact that Biden said he wanted a ceasefire by Ramadan, that the U.S. is putting out these messages, Blinken travels there, Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, all of them are saying that this is unacceptable. They know that that's not going to stop Netanyahu. And the problem is that the U.S. is giving, as you said, a green light to the Zionist regime, the Netanyahu regime, to slaughter Palestinians. Now, the other aspect of this is, what about Europe? What about the European allies, the NATO allies of the United States? There have been a few voices raised, but on the whole, the Europeans remain fully in the camp of Netanyahu. Obviously, many of them believe that the solution to the problem in the region is to drive the Palestinians out of Palestine. They won't say it, but that's what they're letting Netanyahu do. And so I'm not surprised that it's continued. I'm horrified that it is. My organization is working to do everything we can to build a movement to stop it. But so far, the Biden regime is totally committed to defending Netanyahu, despite his statements today on MSNBC that he's upset with Netanyahu.
Yeah, stay with me on that. I'm going to get to that a little bit later in the program. Now, John, did you expect that a ceasefire would be in place by the month of Ramadan?
Well, I believe that the issue of ceasefire before Ramadan, which was just lip service by the Biden, I believe that they know the Ramadan is starting tomorrow. And the Israelis, for several times, refused, after meeting with the Qatari mediators and the Egyptian mediators, they refused any proposal proposed by Hamas, which is a simple proposal, is that the, well, obviously, Israel had to draw from Gaza. A ceasefire, you know, will be at the same time. And then the first week, they will start, obviously, going through exchange of prisoners. And then from there, they take it for second phase, which is the Israelis would have to be out of Gaza completely. Now, they rejected that, okay, because they wanted to give the Palestinians a break in Ramadan, so after Ramadan, they'll be ready to come back and slaughter them. They are refusing a permanent ceasefire. They wanted a ceasefire only for Ramadan. This is not acceptable for the Palestinians.
Right.
So that's why the proposal of having a ceasefire before Ramadan or for Ramadan is fair.
Right. What about that, Harley? It's actually quite mind-boggling that it is proposed, and we saw it earlier, there is a temporary ceasefire. We have a pause, and then we get back to the genocide. I mean, it is so mind-boggling, so dystopian just to think about this being even a possibility that they were bringing this up.
Well, that just shows the hypocrisy. I mean, the idea that you're going to stop firing for a little bit of time to get the hostages back, then you're going to go back in and continue the mass murder. The fact that no one's calling that out shows you the extent to which the West has lost all semblance of morality. Now, I just was at a briefing this afternoon at the South African embassy in Berlin, and what they said is they're going to continue to go to the International Court of Justice with one complaint after another to try and get some motion on this. But you look at what this means, even if the International Court of Justice rules that this is genocide and it should stop, it goes to the United Nations. And the U.S. continues to veto even a ceasefire resolution at the U.N. So when the U.S. says they want a ceasefire, I ask, well, what's the evidence that they really do? There's no evidence that they do. Right. They're comfortable with the destruction of the Palestinian population. And, of course, this goes back to why it is that they supported Netanyahu's efforts to break apart the unity of the Palestinians, why Netanyahu for a period of time was funding Hamas, why the Israelis were so-called caught off guard on October 7th. This is what Israel has intended to do. The ethnic cleansing has not stopped from 1948 to the present.
Okay, well, John, from a military perspective, the Zionist regime really has not been successful in Gaza. Are you surprised at the way the Palestinian resistance has inflicted harm, though, on the Zionist military?
I didn't think so, because this is not the first war, actually. The only difference between this war and previous war, this is the genocide, where they now they change the tactic of attacking civilians, bombing schools and hospitals. They know if they went, obviously, for a one-to-one fight with Hamas, they will not really be able to succeed. They tried Hamas several times before, and they failed. The only difference now is they are not attacking Hamas per se. They are attacking the civilians and hospitals and the schools. You know, it is really a barbaric war, not a war, a barbaric genocide against the Palestinian civilians. So I'm not surprised that the Palestinians, who will fight to the last second, the last drop of blood, to defend their own land.
Right, of course. Well, Harley, why is the U.S. playing this game as if it wants to help the Palestinians and get aid to them, but at the same time it doesn't actually stop the genocide and it actually helps with it?
Well, let me give you a slightly broader perspective where this fits, which is that we've just seen motion with the so-called BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, expanding to include a number of nations in the region, including the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Iran. Now, the importance of that is that the United States, the military-industrial complex that controls the United States, is trying to destroy the potential for a new financial system. And you see that in terms of the attacks on Russia, the attempt to destroy Russia, and now we see the attempt to create a wider regional war. For what purpose? To maintain the U.S. sole superpower status, with Israel as an enforcer agent of that. My view and our view is that Israel is being used as a tool by the Anglo-American networks to maintain the unipolar order. And so, and from that standpoint, Biden, Blinken, Sullivan, they don't care one bit for the murder of Palestinian children. We saw that with Madeleine Albright the former Secretary of State, who praised the killing of 500,000 Iraqi children by sanctions, saying that it was worth it to get rid of Saddam Hussein. So this is the bloodthirsty mentality of the clique that controls the government in the United States and the United Kingdom. And that's why they keep vetoing these resolutions, and they cry crocodile tears about the children who are dying as they give more weapons to the Israelis to kill them.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, John, U.S. President Joe Biden on American Network on Saturday said that there is a red line for the Israeli regime in Netanyahu. Later on in the same program, he said there is no red line for the regime. What do you make of this?
I mean, you have to keep in mind one thing, that the players here, the person who controls the whole scene, is not Joe Biden. It's the Zionist lobby in Washington. Obviously, Joe Biden throw this out as election year now, and he tried to distance himself from the genocide by saying, look, we're not going to allow the Israelis attacking Rafah. Well, nearly half of Gaza Strip in the city of Rafah. They're still attacking Rafah, on the edges of Rafah. Yesterday, they killed 30 people. What you mean, it's okay to slaughter other people in Khan Yunis, Bereish camp, 8 refugee camps, they're being slaughtered daily and left to starve to death. Yet he's just worried about Rafah. You know, the issue of the aid, which is, as you mentioned early, they are quick enough to bomb the Hodeidah in Yemen, Hodeidah Airport. They can bomb anywhere, but they cannot drop aid to the Palestinians. Most of the aid was dropped by the Jordanians in the sea, where the Palestinians had to go to the sea to fish the aid, and the Zionist Navy there, killing them on the water. So it's really a hypocrisy of the Biden by actually saying, we have a red line. He cannot cross the red line in Rafah, but we don't have a red line because we cannot really abandon Israel. Well, he's sending daily supply of military equipment to Israel to kill Palestinians. So why is Rafah only? Nearly 780,000 Palestinians in Rafah. Why is Rafah only where there's 750,000 in the central of Gaza and in north of Gaza? They left there to starve to death.
Well, Harley, is the Zionist regime and the regime in Washington basically one and the same?
Well, let me take a step back and make a point that I think is important. The American people are starting to turn against this war. They're seeing the footage, the social media coverage, and we saw the results of even the Democratic Party rebelling against Biden in the Super Tuesday primaries. It's not enough, but it indicates that there are people in the United States who don't agree with this policy. And you see internationally, when the South Africans brought this motion to the International Court of Justice, 55 nations, including the Organization of Islamic Countries, the African Union, and others, testified against Israel, against the Zionists, as carrying out a genocide policy. So there's opposition to it, but not inside the U.S. military-industrial complex. They are totally tied in with the same banks and financial institutions that run Israel. And the question that some people have is the Zionist lobby running the United States. Well, the Zionist lobby is essentially the corporate cartels of banks and defense sector companies and others that want war. They don't care if it's in Ukraine or Israel. They've done their damnedest over the years to try and portray every Palestinian as a terrorist to justify the attack on Palestine. And so most Americans don't know the story of the colonial occupation of Palestine going back beyond 1948 to the whole Balfour Declaration and so on.
Right.
So as a result, the American people let Biden lie and let him get away with it, although, as I said, there is a resistance building to that.
Well, John, since the U.S. and Israeli policy seems to be so intertwined, excuse me, does it mean that both entities can't be charged with war crimes and genocide?
Well, yes, those who are aiding the genocide under the international law, they should be charged because they are part of the genocide. Yet physically, they are not obviously involved. But we do also aware that there is some military involvement by the American Marines in the beginning. Those who listen to a lot of the locals in Khan Yunis, he was actually talking to some of the soldiers who did say we are from USA, spoke to them in English. So the United States cannot just obviously in the end say we have nothing to do with us. They're aiding the Zionist regime, they're supplying them with their weapons, and also they're supplying them with all footages, which is telling them where is the movement of Hamas, if there is any movement. They have their own satellite there, so they are actually practically part of that genocide. But the problem is, whatever happened in the international court or United Nations, there is no mechanism to force Israel or to punish Israel. You know, they are above the law. And when any, as your guest said earlier, any time any resolution goes to the United States, it doesn't matter how many countries will vote for it, one vote, one veto, which is the United States. So that's what they, three times so far, they vetoed the ceasefire.
Right.
Just to stop the killing. It's not even involving the Israelis withdrawn from Gaza and go back to the 7th of October, obviously. They wanted actually to keep the slaughter by actually being an obstacle by stopping the slaughter of the civilians.
Well, Harley, do you think the U.S.'s proposed setup of a port off of Gaza is a ruse, as many analysts are saying, to basically empty Gaza of Palestinians and to take control of the Strip and its natural resources?
Well, I think that's a cruel hoax. The idea that you're going to put a pier out into the ocean and deliver some food. You know, the U.S. made a big deal out of dropping 38,000 meals ready to eat. 38,000 for 1.5 million starving people? You know, I think if it weren't so deadly, it would be, people would be laughing at this. But I want to go back to this question of the complicity of the United States, because the Genocide Convention of 1947-48 said that supplying weapons and support to a nation committing genocide means the nation supplying the aid and the money and the weapons is also complicit. And so under international law, if there really was a rules-based order, which Blinken keeps talking about, the United States should be brought on charges of genocide along with Israel. And the fact that it hasn't been shows the extent to which nations are afraid to turn against the unipolar order. Because the U.S., look, there's the 7th Fleet or the 6th Fleet is in the Mediterranean. The U.S. has proven its willingness to conduct killing in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Libya, in Syria, with the support of the terrorists there. I think the problem is there's got to be a reaction in the United States and Europe. And it's important what you're doing to get the story out, because your news does get covered in the United States. They try to silence it, but the more the truth gets out, the more chance we have that we can turn this around.
Yeah, they definitely try to silence this network many times. But go ahead, John, you want to say something?
Don't forget, in the beginning of the genocide, the USA sent their military ship bordering the Lebanese shores and sent, obviously, threatening messages to the Lebanese government, to Hezbollah. not to involve. Not only they are supplying weapons, they vetoing any resolution to condemn the Zionist entity in the United Nations. They're physically, actually, and they are actually on the sea, telling Hezbollah, if you involve, we had to involve to protect Israel. So as the gentleman just mentioned, aiding and financing is part of that. But as I said earlier, there is no mechanism to force United States or Israel. In 1979, the American bombed the harbor in Nicaragua. The international law obviously decided that the American under Reagan should rebuild the harbor. So we've been waiting 45 years now. Nothing happened. You need to have enforcement to make things happen, not only spending time condemning this and condemning that and nothing happened. Palestinians after South African complained to the court, they still been killed. That war never stopped. Hospitals are still being bombed. Schools are being bombed. So there is no mechanism to stop that unless the Palestinians and the other neighboring resistance intensify their resistance to the Zionist entity, and then that will make a big difference. A little move by Yemen, you know, a little poor country, will make a big difference. Hezbollah keeping the north area obviously busy. We need Iraq and Syria. And the only way, counting on United States government, you know, is not going to make any difference.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with us on this spotlight. Harley Schenker out of Germany, spokesman for International Schiller Institute. John Phoenix out of London, journalist and international relations expert. Thank you for being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, hoping to see you right here next time. Goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Last week, we started explanation of Surah Muzzammil, the number 73 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran, and today we complete it. It has 20 ayahs and revealed in Mecca in the early days of the Prophet's universal mission of Islam. It opens by addressing him as Muzzammil, Odi enwrapped in a cloak or sheet. This epithet means the one renouncing the vanities of the world or separating himself from all trifle matters for the purpose of meditation, which indicates the Prophet's preparedness to receive the divine commandments to guide mankind. The surah describes how God relaxed the early regime of devotion first decreed to the Prophet and prepared him for the weighty message of divine revelation. The Prophet is urged to be patient against the enemies and is informed in Ayah 10 of the punishment that awaits the disbelievers in hell. Ayah 15 refers to the punishment that befell Egyptian tyrant, the Pharaoh, while alive, thereby drowning him in the sea. According to a hadith from the Prophet, whoever regularly recites Surah Muzzammil will not face hardships in this world and in the hereafter. We start from where we left you last Friday and invite you to listen to ayahs 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14.
واصبر على ما يقولون واهجرهم هجرا جميلا وذرني والمكذبين أولي النعمة ومهلهم قليلا إن لدينا أنكالا وجحيما وطعاما ذا غصة وعذابا أليما يوم ترجف الأرض والجبال وكانت الجبال كثيبا مهيلا.
And be patient over what they say and keep away from them in a grateful manner. And leave me to deal with the deniers, the opulent, and give them a little respite. Indeed, with us are heavy fetters and a fierce fire, and a food that chokes those who gulp it, and a painful punishment prepared for the day when the earth and the mountains will quake, and the mountains will be like dunes of shifting sand. Might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last week, we said the midnight vigil is very effective in self-building through sincere worship, since it is the power of prayers and reflection on the flawless eloquence and timeless wisdom of the Noble Quran that provides us the clarity of vision to properly carry our daytime duties with reliance upon God alone, rather than trusting mortals, however powerful, or fearing their malice. In the ayahs that we recited to you now, God tells the Prophet of Islam, and through him all Muslims, to be patient and tolerant in the face of those who ridicule. The best way is to keep away from them at times in a graceful manner in order to avoid their evil. Keeping away from opponents, however, does not mean not to fulfill our obligations and duties in society, which should be as firm as resolve on the battlefields to decisively defeat the enemy, but lenient at the negotiating table to politely convey the truth to convince the other side. In other words, the Prophet and the believers are like a gardener tolerating the strings of thorns in order to pick up flowers. As Ayah 11 says, the matter of the obstinate deniers of truth, most of whom are opulent persons and hence arrogant, should be left to God Almighty, who gives them respite to repent and reform. But if they continue to indulge in their sinful ways as the next Ayah warns, terrible punishment shall be their fate. The disbelievers and unrepentant sinners are warned of the fetters of hell and its fierce fire, as well as indelible food that choke the throat. In contrast to the delicious food they had enjoyed in the world and indulged in the pleasures of the flesh. The severity of such torments is known to no one but God Almighty. The inmate of hell shall be fed from the tree of Zakum, a bitter and poisonous plant of a foul smell. On the day of resurrection, the seemingly mighty mountains shall disintegrate and turn into soft sand in which feet sink. From these ayahs, we learn that number one, the best way to confront insults and ridicule is to be patient and ignore them instead of behaving in the same irrational way towards opponents. Number two, the true believer should act in civilized way by putting trust in God without paying attention to the nonsense uttered by the insulters. And number three, wealth and opulence often mislead many possessors to drift away from religion, ridicule believers, and indulge in cardinal sins, as history bears witness. Now we invite you to listen to ayahs 15, 16, 17, 18 and 19 of the same surah.
Inna arsalna ilaykum rasulan shahidan alaykum kama arsalna ila fir'aun rasula. فَعَصَى فِرْعَوْنُ الرَّسُولَ فَأَخَذْنَاهُ أَخْذًا وَبِيلًا فَكَيْفَ تَتَّقُونَ إِن كَفَرْتُمْ يَوْمًا يَجْعَلُ الْوِلْدَانَ شِيبًا السَّمَاءُ مُنْفَطِرٌ بِهِ كَانَ وَعْدُهُ مَفْعُولًا إن هذه تذكرة فمن شاء اتخذ إلى ربه سبيلا.
Indeed, we have sent to you a prophet to be a witness to you, just as we sent a prophet to Pharaoh. But Pharaoh disobeyed the prophet, Moses, so we seized him with a terrible seizing. So, if you disbelieve, how will you avoid the day which will make children white-headed, and wherein the sky will be rent apart, his promise is bound to be fulfilled? This is indeed a reminder, so let anyone who wishes take the way toward his Lord. These ayahs begin by drawing a comparison between the Prophet of Islam, who was raised as a witness over mankind, with Prophet Moses, who was sent to guide the Egyptian Pharaoh. It is a warning to the polytheists to heed the terrible fate that befell Pharaoh for rejecting Prophet Moses' message of monotheism and the path of truth. Those who persist in unbelief and sins are posed the question, what makes you think that your abominable sins and disbelief will keep you safe from divine wrath that makes the children grow old? The torments inflicted upon the disbelievers and unrepentant sinners on the day of resurrection shall be so severe, horrible, and harsh that the hairs of children will turn white due to the terrible shock. On that day, in fulfillment of divine promise, the sky shall rent asunder to the extent that even the huge celestial bodies and planets shall be shattered by the terrible happenings. So, how could mankind, which is weak and vulnerable by nature, shall face such incidents? So choose the right path that leads to the bounties of the all-merciful Lord before death ends the transient life of the mortal world. and know that the Almighty Creator, who has endowed human beings with gift of the intellect, wants them to properly recognize the truth and choose it out of their free will, rather than imposing it upon them. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, prophets are witness to the deeds of the nations. They have been sent to guide, while Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and the infallible Imams, are witness over all our deeds. Number two, the accounts of the past generations are lessons to be heeded by the next and future generations so as not to repeat the same blunders. Number three, there is no way of escape for the faithless from Allah's punishment on the day of resurrection. And number four, the Almighty Creator has bestowed mankind the best of creation with the gifts of the intellect, speech, and free will to choose the truth from firm conviction. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment that marks the end of Surah Muzammil, here is the last ayah, that is number 20.
إِنَّ رَبَّكَ يَعْلَمُ أَنَّكَ تَقُومُ أَدْنَى مِنْ ثُلُثَيِ اللَّيْلِ وَنِصْفَهُ وَثُلُثَهُ وَطَائِفَةٌ مِنَ الَّذِينَ مَعَكَ وَاللَّهُ يُقَدِّرُ اللَّيْلَ وَالنَّهَارَ علم أن لن تحصوه فتاب عليكم فاقرؤوا ما تيسر من القرآن علم أن سيكون منكم مرضى وآخرون يضربون في الأرض يبتغون من فضل الله وآخرون يقاتلون في سبيل الله فاقرؤوا ما تيسر منه وأقيموا الصلاة وآتوا الزكاة وأقرضوا الله قرضا حسنا وما تقدموا لأنفسكم من خير تجدوه عند الله هو خيرا وأعظم أجرا واستغفروا الله إن الله غفور رحيم.
Indeed, your Lord knows that you stand vigil nearly 2/3 of the night, or a half or third of it, along with a group of those who are with you. Allah measures the night and the day. He knows that you cannot calculate it exactly, so He was lenient toward you. So recite as much of the Quran as is feasible. He knows that some of you will be sick, while others will travel in the land seeking Allah's grace, and yet others will fight in the way of Allah. So recite as much of it as is feasible, and maintain the prayer and pay the zakat and lend Allah a good loan. Whatever good you send ahead for your souls, you will find it with Allah in a form that is better and greater with respect to reward. And plead to Allah for forgiveness. Indeed, Allah is all forgiving, all merciful. This ayah describes some of the characteristics of the true believers. It starts by emphasizing, or more properly re-emphasizing, the night vigil for performance of the non-obligatory post-midnight tahajjud prayer and recitation of the Noble Quran with contemplation, as we said last week while explaining the first ayah of Surah Muzammil. Thus, the first and last ayahs of this surah, if studied together, make it clear that though the tahajjud prayer is highly recommended, it is not obligatory, yet its rewards are many. The phrase, along with a group of those who are with you, refers to the Prophet's cousin, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, and to the loyal companion, Abu Zar Ghifari. The ayah endorses traveling and fighting for just cause. It stresses the punctual performance of the ritual prayer and calls on believers to pay the zakat from surplus income to the poor people, help them with interest-free loans, and spend for good causes by calling such a practice lend Allah a good loan, which includes spending for good causes. It adds that whatever good one does is solely for his or her soul and will be compensated by Allah much more than mere reward. It concludes with the commandment to plead the All-Merciful Creator for forgiveness, saying, Allah is all-forgiving. The ayah teaches us the following points. Number one, Islam is the comprehensive religion, which besides regulating the ritual prayers, commands resolving of social issues by helping the poor and for spending in the way of Allah without being despondent of divine mercy. And number two, religious orders are in compliance with an individual's condition, and all good deeds, whether they require travel or fighting for a just cause, entail abundant rewards from Allah, who forgives those who repent.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.